Welcome, everyone, to the Q&A session for our upcoming course, Empowering the Goddess Within You After 50, the 7-week journey to deepen your most meaningful stage of life through the discovery of 7 feminine archetypes. This is Lisa Bonnies, and I'm deeply honored to be hosting this Q&A call for the Shift Network, where we'll explore the teachings of one of my favorite writers, Jean Shinoda Bolen, and address questions about her upcoming 7-week course, Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50, which begins next Wednesday, February 8th. Later, I'll explain how you can participate in this course, even if you can't attend the live sessions, but first, I want to introduce our guest. Jean Shinoda Bolen is the preeminent scholar, teacher, and therapist who blazed a new trail of understanding feminine archetypes, particularly how they express in the lives of women with her best-selling book, Goddesses in Every Woman, and its companion publication, Goddesses in Older Women. Jean shows how our culture has channeled women into overly narrow boxes and roles, often suppressing their power, vitality, and creative expression. In just a few moments, we're going to open up for your questions, but first, I want to welcome Jean Shinoda Bolen to the call. Welcome, Jean. It is such a pleasure to be on the phone with you today.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to this because you never know what the questions are going to be, and I never know what answer will come out of me. And you had invited me to do something at the very beginning. And what I wanted to do was sing my Tibetan bell, which is how I will begin all of my classes. It's a Tibetan bell that is really attuned to the heart chakra. And so as you hear it, you'll feel it in the center of your chest between your breasts. And it quiets it serves like sage does in saging a room. It takes the static out of the mind and out of the room and settles us all in together at the same level. So hear it, feel it, and then when it ends and there's a little quiet, you can feel the first question.
Very nice. Thank you, Jean. Those of you who are listening, we have the rest of our time together to dive into your questions for Jean as we prepare for her upcoming course. Again, that's called Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50. And again, it begins next Wednesday, February 8th. And if you want to learn more about the 7-week course, please visit goddessesinyoucourse.com to see the full description. So let's go ahead and get started with your questions. If you're calling in on the phone, please hit *2 to ask a question directly of Jean. Again, from the phone, that is *2 on your keypad. And those of you on the webcast, just go ahead and type in your questions, and I will be happy to read them aloud to Jean. In the meantime, we've already got some questions lined up. Lots of people wanting to ask some questions. We have a question here from Sandra, who wants to know. She says, I'm interested in the course, and I have the book, Goddesses and Older Women, but what I would like to know is, what is the difference of this course with the book?
The course helps focus what has come up in life, and a lot has come up in life with this Trump administration and the women's marches last weekend. It's just amazing how there is now a hopeful note. Because women who were boomers or post-boomers and millennials, I mean, to be at the march is just to feel the generations of grandmothers, mothers, granddaughters, mothers and daughters. The energy field is being astir. And one of the things that I am doing by teaching is to take the work that I do with individuals into the bigger field. That's what my books did. But books and lectures, for that matter, it's like there's a way in which something can jump out to the individual listener if you really are involved in wanting to be affected in some way by the book, the talk, the going to the therapist, whatever. It is about you. Essentially, I think that's one of the major differences between a book that has to have so much more information in it and a talk lecture where what comes up has a certain spontaneity about it. So I'm not sure what to say. I mean, I'm sort of wandering around the question because it's not that easy a question to answer. It'll have to do, okay. Though.
Okay, that's cool. I probably should have started with a different question to start out with. I do have a question here from Julie. This is a little bit long, so give me a second here to read it out to you. She says, I'm currently passing through the portal of menopause. I find it challenging on my social network. There are so few women who are toughing it out or have any helpful insights or advice. I felt compelled to refuse the only medical advice I was given, which is HRT, and the advice of my mother, who tells the doctor, you need to rip that shit out, meaning my ovaries. My only friends who have already been through it don't really seem to have any help, although they're at least sympathetic. I feel like they're reluctant to talk about the day-to-day struggle in a meaningful way. Please speak to the struggle and tell me, do you have any helpful strategies for dealing with the physical manifestations of menopause?
Well, I think the basic eating well and exercising and doing everything to be in good health is a beginning place. But that's not my major area anyway. You know, I except in the sense of body psyche. I know that body and psyche, body, heart, and mind are geared together, so that there's something about having a sense that this is a major transition that is significant and things will be stirred up and should be stirred up. In fact, this is a time very much like that period when you started menstruating, when you have doubts about yourself and your body and you're wondering what's coming next. All of that stirs a person up, and something about the degree of difficulty has something to do with resistance to stepping through the period and moving into the next period. And I think it varies a lot physically or physiologically for women, and it has something to do with the amount of natural circulating estrogens and all, and you know, how much of a drop you're having to experience. But it's uncomfortable for many women, and it's hardly a discomfort for other women. It's so varied. Question is, are you having hot flashes? Are you able to sleep during the night? How much of the symptoms of premenopause, perimenopause, postmenopause, that whole mix up of things? And then there's also a deep psychological kind of encounter that you are really realizing that time has passed and you are shifting into another phase of your life, like it or not. And so the more you can have a sense that this is a psychological and physiological transition, and the more you do the both together, I think the deeper the significance and the more likely possibility of moving into the next phase with a certain sense of grace and depth. And I would listen to alternatives. If you don't want to do minimal estrogen, progesterone kinds of of supplements really the alternative integrative medicines, the use of herbal supplements that do much the same, all's available. So learn what your, you know, learn what makes most sense to you.
Okay. That's actually a really, I like the way that you steered it from just the physical symptoms to more of a body-mind-spirit causation kind of thing, because we do have questions from other women about their menopause symptoms and it possibly being a manifestation of feminine rage. In fact, we have a question here from Arlene to sort of continue that line. She says, can you offer some ideas on how to work with the goddess of wrath, how to face and own the power of wrath to bring clarity and transformation, and how to work with the outrage of being invisible and meaningless in today's culture, how to become a formidable crone?
That's a big question for us.
It's a lot of questions.
First of all, this is a time when rage often starts to come up. I talk about the enough is enough archetype. And really, I hope that it's not just the individual woman responding to her individual situation, but the global community of women that can do like we did in the march, you know, about 5 million of us in the United States and in the world marched, and it was peaceful. It felt wonderful. And it has something to do with women having, and this is a body thing again, but it's a body hormone thing, that women bond, and women also respond to stress differently than men do. So you could say, in effect, that every demonstration is a stressful expression at some level to what is going on in the bigger world, which is awful at some level. So when the guys organize a protest, you've got a lot of testosterone and a lot of adrenaline going, and you've got, you know, you've got encounters, and the police are around the edge and all that sort of stuff. Interesting how different the women's marches were.
Right.
How nice it felt to be in it. How bonded we felt. How thoughtful. There was something about this was not adrenaline, testosterone. This was oxytocin and estrogen, progesterone, that sort of thing. It's a different kind of energy to bring into the situation. And I think that to protest, to organize, begins with becoming an activist on behalf of your own life and your own situation, as well as if you're called to go onto the global stage, then it's the bigger world. But I truly feel that if you have a circle of support of other women who you trust, and over time a women's circle can become a significant relationship for the rest of your life. I mean, we see each other through the ups and downs. The, you know, in a group of six or seven women, for example, lots of life goes on. We are with each other as parents die, as relationships end, as children go through what children go through, and we lose some of our children. And, you know, it's life, but it's shared life, and that's shared dreams as well, and shared anger. And what happened in the late 60s and 70s was called the women's movement, and it changed the world for women in the United States, and it rippled out. Well, it appeared to be just women talking to each other, having their consciousness raised. I was about to say rage, because that's true. There was a sense of, oh, it isn't just me that has been harassed. It's not just me that feels little and insignificant. It's not just me that has been passed over, et cetera. Women became aware,
right,
about how sexism and patriarchy was doing a number on us. Mm-hmm. And that moved us into action with support from each other. So, okay, now you are, say, here we are, and you are learning about a lot of different things, even such words as mansplaining. We didn't used to have words like that. That's a new one, by the way, over the
right.
last couple of years, where the guy sprawls, takes over the space, and explains to you as if you were a little girl something that he thinks of himself as an expert on, and you're just supposed to passively sit and take it all in. And we're having a little trouble with that because so many women actually do know a lot about a lot of things. So how to be an activist, how to take that anger and really feel inside enough is enough, but not be possessed and being taken over by it. That is the challenge. And that's where compassion and wisdom and strategy and an awareness of time passing all come together with what am I going to do with this wrath? You know, I don't want to, I'm angry enough to really make a scene. Shall I make a scene? You know, there's this sort of question, how can I best use this as energy to change myself and change the situation that I don't like? I mean, that's essentially the challenge. Because anger has been so unacceptable from the time we were little girls often, and certainly to get along and be viewed as feminine, somehow being angry didn't ever fit in that very much.
Right.
And women aren't very good at doing it. They're better at getting depressed, which is what we do. I mean, anger turned, if you don't find a way to express your anger in some constructive way, and instead you direct it, you keep it all in, essentially it gets directed against yourself. And that's one of the definitions of depression. It's anger turned against the self. And so it's a real key thing, this whole question about what are you angry about, how are you going to deal with it, what are you going to do, where are you going to share it, and find your view validated, or a friend that says you're a bit over the edge about it, but you certainly have a point, what are you going to do next, and go and do it with the full support of your support circle behind you. This is about speaking truth to power, for example.
Okay. Yeah. That's it really is, I think, a challenge. As you said, we're all sort of taught to just be pretty and cute and quiet, and, you know, your opinions are, you better have a moderated tone if you want to be heard, because otherwise you're called shrill or you're
a
just
bitch.
Sort of, you know, or a bitch, yeah. So we are really challenged to find a way to modulate our tones, even though we don't want to have to do that. You know, why do we have to when they don't? But the fact is, if we want to be heard, we have to do something. So I like the direction that you're going here, that this can be done. It's just sort of we have to find our way to do it. That's terrific. We have a caller here on the line. Let's go ahead and take a call from area code 310. Go ahead and give us your name, and what is your question for Jean?
Yes, my name is Melanie. And
hi, Melanie.
My question is, I had a dream about 2 weeks ago that I wondered if Jean would have a comment on. I dreamed I was in a house with a floor-to-ceiling glass wall looking out at a northern sea. The house was on an inlet, and I saw these large waves. I realized these waves were enormous serpents. They came and transformed into three beings standing looking through the glass at me. They were upright on two legs, but their legs were sort of striped like zebras. Their faces were on the front of their face, sort of human, and they had round ears. And I'm just wondering, I thought ears on top of their head. They didn't have ears on the side like a human. It was like they were kind of a human animal.
Fish.
Yeah, so I just wondered what you might say about that dream.
Well, first of all, it's a very interesting dream. And the I gather you weren't afraid, which is, you know, one way of beginning with a dream is to get the feeling sense of it. And you weren't afraid.
Yeah, I was silently sending them the message, hello, hello. That's
okay.
What I didn't say it out loud. They understood me, but I didn't have to say it.
So you were receptive. You were not only not afraid, you were receptive. Now, the interesting thing about many dreams with water in it is that, and especially ocean waves coming up, is that it usually has a sense, there's a depth of feeling arising. And some women have dreams in which there's no protection as the wave comes and threatens to swallow them or bring them out to sea or something like that. What you have in a dream is a window, a glass window that isn't threatened by breakage. It allows you to look out and see these enormous waves and these beings coming out when you invited them out to see you and vice versa through this pane of glass. And I think what's fascinating is your fascination with them and their wish to communicate with you and your sense that there is a human quality about them, but there's something else that is archetypal or deep or from nature or whatever. And who are these, and what do they symbolize that you are meeting? It suggests that in this phase of your life, you are open to and receptive to some new feeling information that comes up from the depths of the sea, which is the collective, I mean, it's at one level, it's often symbolic of the collective unconscious. But it's also something that we also are very much aware that our oceans environmentally are in real trouble. And the animals and life in it are in trouble. So is this a internal symbolic dream, or is it a dream that is also putting you in touch with a connection with a current environmental crisis as well?
The fact that they...
So that's a wide-ranging response.
Yeah, and there were three of them. I sort of wondered about that sort of trilogy I was, in a way, looking at. I don't know if that...
Well, it's not. It does make it bigger it makes it more likely transpersonal than personal. And the whole. You completed with them. I mean, there are actually four people. There are four entities in the dream. You're the fourth one. And this, whatever the dream is saying, will make sense only if you, the fourth one, can incorporate and connect with the three, which there's a lot of things about threes. There's the first trinity was made Mother Crone, and then there's Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. There's the sense that of three in one. It's a kind of depth symbol. It's also the sea has that same quality of you know, the Poseidon comes up with a trident. There's something about what it is you are tuning into from the depth of your collective, and I think also a bigger, it's a big dream. I mean, it used to be that women had dreams for the people or dreams for the tribe.
Oh.
And I think if you would hold this dream and write it, maybe paint it, share it with a circle of others, and have other people associate to it.
Okay.
It will make it a lot more alive, and at some point, see, you're the expert on it. What I do in my work and in general is that I sketch out the potential meanings of it, but the expert on what this particular dream or any particular dream truly means is the dreamer herself. It's when you say, aha, that makes sense, that you've grasped the meaning of the dream.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Oh, good. Where are you from?
I'm originally from Northern California. I live in L.A. I grew up in the Central Valley in a farming town.
This is a Californian. Yes, here in California.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, maybe it's a matter of going to the beach and meditating more
yeah.
on the dream, really. You know, anything
okay.
that keeps it alive.
Yes. Thank you. Several things to really work with, and keeping it alive. That's a very. It's been staying very alive for me, but I'm so glad you said this as well.
Good.
Okay. Well, then let's go on to another question here from the webcast. In fact, there are a lot of people asking this basic question, so I'm going to use this one question as sort of an example. There's a lot of women asking this same thing. This is Sue, who says, after a 40-plus year, very happy marriage, in finger quotes, I'm transitioning to a solo life. I was blindsided by my ex-husband's affair and a subsequent unwanted divorce. I'm currently searching for grounding within myself and trying to formulate a new relationship with others in my world. How can examining the feminine archetypes aid me in my journey?
One is it's a combination of having the sense of them, which is kind of the educational part, and the recollection of before you put your energies into this marriage and identified that this is who you were. Who were you before that? Back when there was, especially when you were in your teens and 20s, and you had certain interests and you were drawn to certain things that maybe you have not had time or place to spend time with that part of yourself. And then as you read about archetypes that draw from these neglected possibilities in yourself, again, there's that possibility of recognition, a combination of what you are drawn to do and remember from the past, the kind of potential synchronicities that come up in which you find a door opening in that direction and where you say yes, and the essential energy, I think, that would be very helpful is the exploration quality of the archetype of Artemis. That Artemis's world, she was the goddess of the hunt and goddess of the moon, and her terrain was the wilderness, and that is an actual place for many women who have an Artemis element in them, that they the wilderness, to go camping, to go in the mountains, to hike unknown trails that you've never done before. That's stereotypical Artemis. But wilderness is also a metaphor. So if you are now on your own after 40 years of being paired, and it's a new terrain, you know, will you find the kind of spirit of the explorer who is curious, who wants to grow, who wants to see what lies over the next hill? This is one that that cultivating it, and there is such a thing as cultivating an archetype. When you are aware of an archetype that would really be helpful if you cultivated it, you in effect are inviting that potential in yourself, because all the archetypes are present as potentials in us, and many of them come early and are very dominant, and so they stay sort of the major dominant archetype. But all of them are potentials in us, like all human abilities are potential in us, to speak, to paint, to be musical, to be athletic, to be coordinated. Well, they vary as natural gifts, but they all could be developed when one is drawn to do that. So knowing what you might benefit from, especially if some part of you yearns for something you hadn't given words for before, this is how the archetypes really help, because up until you connect with an archetype, very often girls and women live out the projections and expectations of family, religion, husband, community. So you become who they expected you to be, and if you were good enough at it, you could carry it off. But only when it is also deeply connected to the archetypal level in you is there a sense of it being personally meaningful. And so to find new archetypes coming alive in the last, in mid-70s, you could have 20 more years to discover what it is that you have that would be new and interesting. And the other part of discovering archetypes as you get older is to remember the playful parts of yourself that maybe you've just been too busy being a responsible grown-up for too long, and to discover Persephone, for example. It's very interesting to know what the archetypes are and therefore what's stirring inside.
Right. And since this course is aimed at women after 50, chances of, some of us be either being widowed or divorced after a lifetime of being with the same person are really great. So I think that was a really good question, and I thought it was an excellent answer. I hope that the questioner thought so as well. We have a question here from Georgie, who says, I'd love to hear your thoughts on courage for women as we process stress differently than men. I'm also looking to understand how we access our authentic feminine courage, which I suspect originates in our hearts and uterus. That's from Georgie.
yeah, because courage comes from the French word cœur, for heart. And really, it takes courage to do so many of the things that women have had to do since they were girls. I mean, we grow up in a world where we learn we are vulnerable, and yet we have to go out into that world, and we have to make decisions. And when we make decisions, the question is, will we listen to our heart, or will we listen to other people tell us what we should do? And when you are making a heart decision that goes against what your family or your partner or your community expects of you, because people want you to be the person they think you are, and you're maybe perfectly fine in that role because you know it well and it is who you are, but there's a side of you or sides of you that are also truly your growing edge. And people often don't like us to grow because we then are not the same person they're used to. And especially if we draw attention to ourselves in some way and this embarrasses some other people in our lives, by the way, it can get to be our children. Our children can say to us, "Oh, Mother, what are you doing now?" And so to be a little outrageous can actually take some courage, and it when it comes from the heart. And see that there's also an energy field that I've mentioned when I rang the bell, the heart chakra. It isn't just the organ of the actual heart, but the actual heart also has nerve endings in it. So there's something about heart knowledge and the heart chakra that lets us know that this is meaningful to me, that when I am here, when I am doing this, I am centered in my heart, and this is right for me. Now, the uterus side also obvious, it's the organ of actual creativity, the ability to create new life, to be a holding vessel, to support the growth of a embryo, to grow into a fetus, to grow into a baby. That's what we physiologically can do, but that is also metaphorically what women do and do with other people in their work. They can nourish a dream of, women are often referred to as dream carriers for their partners, where you hold the dream of somebody or our children and believe in them and help them to grow. So what wants to grow in you? This is a question that I think is very relevant. I use the word pregnancy in my I've written a lot of books. I've written 13 so far, and I'm not writing a book right now. And when people ask me, are you working on something? I actually think, well, I'm not pregnant with a book. So right now, and it has to do with having something growing in me that wants me to put it in a form and bring it out into the world. And so there is a quality of pregnancy, or the metaphor therefore of uterus, as being what wants to grow out of me and into the world that I give shape to. And when I am pregnant with a book, that's what it feels like. And so when I'm not writing, it's because it's, I'm not pregnant with a book at the moment. And if one wants to come along, I will. But meanwhile, what new has come along has been this whole Shift Network thing, which is intriguing and deepening and allows me to draw upon the books I have written, but to then take where I am now and give it further shape as it goes out into the world. And since this is one of the things that is my path, to want to help, to want to make a difference, And in my activism towards the Fifth Women's World Conference, I sometimes lightly joke, but it's not really a joke, when I say, well, my hobby is changing the world. Because at some level it is, that whether it's one person at a time, as in depth work, or whether it's working on a UN Fifth Women's World Conference and a global women's movement that could then really change the world, I'm doing my little bit. So when I marched and was just one of 5 million women who marched, I was doing my part to change the world. And I want other people, especially women people, to understand that that's how we do it. We do our part. And when enough of us reaches critical mass, tipping point, we in fact change the world.
Right.
And heart and uterus really are what we have to work through and with.
Awesome. All right. Wow. We also have a lot of questions here from people asking about dealing with health issues, and I'm not talking about like asking for medical advice, but here's a perfect example. This is from Krishna, who asked, How could exploring the goddess archetypes through the course help me with healing from cancer and re-entry into my life after that?
Well, I wrote a book called Close to the Bone, Life-Threatening Illness as a Soul Journey, and it is really about what a life-threatening illness like a cancer diagnosis does. And I draw from myths, which I so often do, in what I certainly have with the goddess archetypes. But the idea that you are like Persephone, gathering flowers or something, or, you know, doing your ordinary life, when suddenly the earth opens up under you and you are abducted into the underworld. Or you're like Inanna and you're really a big important person in your world, and you are drawn to go into the underworld because you hear that your other side, your sister, in this case, Yerushkagel, is suffering in the underworld. And you think you can just go down there and find out what the matter is. And what you find yourself doing is being brought into the underworld of possibilities, of fears, and of the potential to be transformed. When the inside of having a cancer diagnosis is a very big one. One is that you are aware at some visceral level that you're not going to live forever. In fact, you have something in you that could kill you. So suddenly you have, you know, what are you going to identify with? What side of you are you going to incorporate this new knowledge into making what you do next meaningful? Are you going to find, I mean, this is about, actually, if I were to say what my course is about, it's about discovering that you are the protagonist in your own story and that there are things that happen to you where you must decide what you are going to do in response. And it isn't just outer choice, it's inner choice. I wrote Goddesses in Every Woman, and we'll draw from that. But the one goddess that really got my attention and was responsible for writing Goddesses in Older Woman was Hecate, the goddess of the crossroads. And she is the goddess of the crossroad who could see where you're coming from and the two forks and where the fork in the road might take you. So after you've had the end of a 40-year marriage or a diagnosis of cancer, or your kids have grown up and left the nest, or you've just been fired, whatever it is that suddenly has happened to you, or you are now menopausal, it means you'll not be able to have the child that you thought you would have. It means that you are viewed differently by the world. All of these are major things that happened, but it brings you to the archetype of the wise woman, Hecate, goddess of the crossroads, with whom you need to sit and realize your own story that brought you here and what your choices are. Choices that have to do with actual decisions about moving or a new relationship or something like that. But essentially it's often an inner one that precedes it. And the biggest one is, will I become cynical and bitter? Will I whine about my life? And that's why I wrote Crones Don't Whine, which is like, you'll never get into the wise woman category of person if you sit at the doorway to the third phase of your life and you whine about what you didn't get in the first two periods of your life. And you compare yourself to somebody else who has a bigger house or happy children or an ongoing steady marriage or whatever it is, or fame or whatever it is you aspire to and that you're envious of somebody else. Well, if you sit there and here you are, you've got a mind that works, you're reasonably healthy, you're in a first world country, you are, you know, you don't have terrorists going around, you're not... All the things that if you only had a little bit better perspective, you could realize, I'm a pretty lucky person. And yes, I've had hard places in my life. And there is something I need to let go of if I'm going into the next stage of my life. It's not about, it's to not complain and not whine, but to really accept, really look at what it is you need to let go of. And it may be that you do need to forgive yourself. Often people focus always on forgiving other people, but I find that women are so easily blameworthy that they find all kinds of reasons to blame themselves for whatever the situation is. And
right.
The place of compassion, and this is one of the goddesses and older women, is the place where you don't have to deserve it even. You just have to realize that compassion is available and to stop judging yourself. You see, if you judge yourself, that I will be compassionate to myself if. When to just feel badly and compassionate because you're suffering would be a good idea. So
mm-hmm.
when you're sitting at the crossroads with Hecate, it's an inner place of what will I do now on many different levels. I know I'm getting away from the original question, but the original question did have to do with both the cancer diagnosis and what's next, as I recall hearing it. And there will be major decisions there because you have to decide practical things about, well, every woman, by the way, on getting a cancer diagnosis. And I do want to make a point that that the incidences of being more of cancer, the cancers of the breast, every decade as we get older, the incidence gets a little greater. We are not spared because we hit 70 and 80 and haven't had breast cancer. But the cancers we get are slower growing, usually. We can remember when we're 70 about the good friends who had really malignant cancers, and they're not here anymore. The cancers got them in their 50s. And here you are, say, in your 70s, and yet the cancer you had might return, but often it is slower, and you have to decide, well, what expert are you going to listen to? What are you going to do next? Because there's something about cancers in women that seem to be influenced a lot by the mixture of hormones and feelings and decisions we make and support from other people. It's a very complex kind of a situation that gets our attention. And then it's like, will we listen to our experts and agree, will it reach some part of us in which you trust this expert and that's what you'll do? Or will you listen to experts or opinions and override something in yourself that feels that this one doesn't quite feel right? I am going to get more information, or I'm going to do it differently. If there's any time in your life that it's time to take charge of what it is you feel and think, it's after you've entered the third phase of your life. Now, really, you can become more authentically yourself than at any other time.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to think about. I think we're all going to have to re-listen to this call to really get the depth of what you just discussed, because that was some powerful stuff. Well, looking at the clock here, we have time for just a couple more questions. So hang on. I need to talk just a little bit about the course, because we are getting questions about that as well. Once again, the name of the course is Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50. And this is going to be a really powerful 7-week journey under Jean's expert guidance, where you'll liberate your authentic self and fullest expression by accessing new goddess archetypes that elevate your wisdom and compassion and creativity after 50 to finally live the life that you've craved and actually earned. And the 7-week course takes place on Wednesdays at noon Pacific time. It starts February 8th. And if for any reason you can't join us live, that is absolutely fine. You will not miss the teachings. You will receive audio recordings, transcripts, and all course handouts on your course homepage. And also, we offer a no-risk money-back guarantee on all of our courses, giving a full 2 weeks until February 22nd in this case to make sure that it's a good fit. And as an added option, all participants are welcome to connect in a private Facebook community group so you can stay connected with one another between classes and even afterwards. Also, everyone who registers receives the Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50 bonus collection, one of which is an audio teaching from Jean called Imagination, Mother of All Possibilities. There is also a video with Jean and Roger Walsh, MD, PhD, entitled The Call of Wisdom. You will also receive an audio of Jean's keynote address from the 3rd International Women's Peace Conference called Heeding the Urgent Message from Mother. And if you register by midnight Pacific on Wednesday, February 1st, that's today, you will receive an additional bonus gift, and that is a video from the 7th International Conference on Science and Consciousness called The Grail is the Goddess, a Healing Paradigm for Psyche and Planet. So lots of good stuff there. Jean, what are you most looking forward to sharing in this course?
Well, I've loved being able to teach from my living room, which I'm where I am right now.
Right.
And the Q&A part is also part. I mean, I teach for, say, over a bit of half the time, but then there's a Q&A after. And I am delighted to be able to share information that will help people, and I'm anticipating that there will be men on this call as well, because there are a lot of men who are therapists who work with women, and just like there were a lot of therapists in general on my first course on Goddesses and Every Woman, so I would expect that to be happening as well, and so that I can share what I know and it goes out further into the world. You know, this is what started me on my own journey in the first place, is the deep wish as an adolescent to help people. So that's why I like this course, because I think it actually does exactly that. And I can do it from my living room.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
You mean your jammies.
Travel. Oh, also, I really wish I have a newsletter. You can sign up on my website, jeanboland.com. And the last one just went out yesterday, and it was about pussy hats and women's marches. So if any of you who are listening don't receive my newsletter, please do go to my website, sign up, and maybe even ask specifically for the last one.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. That's great. Yeah. In fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because that word in particular is a really, divisive one. I mean, on one hand, there's nothing wrong with the word, but on the other hand, a lot of women are really, used to be really offended by that, but now it's like we've reclaimed that word. And
yes.
A lot of us can actually say it out loud now, whereas before it wasn't happening. So, yeah.
Well, one of the things is I put in links to, you know, Trump actually recorded on a live mic saying that phrase.
Uh-huh.
And also I have a link to Gloria Steinem's talk at the Women's March. And the whole there's another link to the people that did Pussy Hat Project, which was genius, absolute genius, to do that. So I usually don't plug my newsletter, but I was so pleased with being on the march and what it did for me, and what it's the note it struck. And it also solved for me a puzzle that has existed ever since I first started telling the story of Demeter and Persephone. And so I've never had an explanation for why Babo how it was that Babo and Izumi, a Japanese major goddess, brought the goddess back to life by lifting her skirt and exposing essentially her pussy. Why did that bring the goddess back? I am so intrigued by that myself. I'll share it when we get to that part of the course, which
awesome.
Is part about the archetypes of healing laughter.
Right. That's like module 4, I think. No, let me look. It's module 5, so yes, we're right there. Okay, great. We have a question here from Alice that I want to make sure that we get to, because I'm sure she's not the only one wondering this. She wonders how to work with goddesses after a strict religious upbringing where I was taught that they were dangerous. How do you address that?
With history? I mean, for one thing, my own Christianity, Protestant version, is a very significant part of my own spiritual life. And as I got exposed, first of all, to the understanding of the historical relevancy of when the Bible was written and who decided what became the official books of the Bible, and I saw it within the historical frame of things. Yet through it is this experience that people had of Christianity, of Jesus, that transformed them. So there was that. And then when I started writing Goddesses in Every Woman, and it was published in 1984, so it goes back a while, it was about goddess. I was comfortable with goddess archetypes because that's the subject. But
right.
Goddesses was a little uncomfortable. It's gotten really into culture now. It's not uncomfortable for most people now. But in women over 70, I would say I'm not surprised. I was uncomfortable with the word goddess because I somehow knew it was a bad word without anybody ever mentioning the word in my earlier Christian background. And then I realized, for one thing, there's no such word in the Bible. Because of the way the Bible is written. So I'd never had any idea that the prohibition against false idols was a rant against images of the feminine body, of nature, of forests. People used to, in the land of Canaan, which was a goddess-worshipping place, a land of milk and honey, the asterisk, was like a, on top of hills there were trees where people went to worship. And I began also, as I did my travels around the world and things, realize that human beings have a natural, innate, archetypal appreciation of reverence. As a species, we relate to the numinous. We relate to something that awes us. We worship. What other species seems to have developed so many different religions and rituals? We do it because somewhere, someplace in us responds to with awe, and we attribute it to something greater than ourselves. And it is greater than ourselves. Consequently, we can't know it, define it, and say, oh, we can bottle it and say, this is what God is. But that doesn't negate the idea at all that there is something, God, goddess, all that is, a higher power, the sacredness of earth. It exists because human beings have always responded to it. So to go to Egypt and see that there are gods with crocodile heads, to see hawk-headed divinities. And then as I wrote about Sekhmet, the image that went through transformative wrath into that peaceful lioness-headed goddess statue that I met because of a sense of presence. I mean, there are some statues and some works of art that hold a certain amount of numinosity in it. That is, people relate to it because we're moved by it. Something touches us. You go up the stairway at the Louvre and you see the winged victory of Samothrace. And it's a wow. I mean, there's something about it. And then for me to go to Samothrace and see a replica of it, that's just a statue. I mean, it doesn't do anything. This is human experience, whether it's to some our ability to pick up divinity or numinosity. Numen comes from the word god, goddess, something like that. Numen in Latin means divinity. So something that has a numen or a numinosity, it's because we recognize it. Something in us resonates with this. And so to claim your own ability to experience what love is, what God is to say, to become more comfortable with words that you may have been told that you should not say, you should not, you know. And so there's a real declaration of your own autonomy and sovereignty that goes with, I'm going to use the word goddess. I'm going to claim the word pussy. I am not going to be ashamed or feel guilty when the feelings I have for these words is positive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm up to these days, is making trouble for the patriarchy by liberating women's minds and hearts.
That's awesome. Wow. Oh, my gosh, look at the clock. We are running over here. This has just been a fascinating hour with you, Gina. I could talk forever. I want to thank our listeners for being with us and for all your wonderful questions. And thank you, Jean, for sharing your wisdom with us today. Once again, Empowering the Goddesses Within You After 50 starts Wednesday, February 8th. Please visit goddessesinyoucourse.com to learn more and to register. And, Jean, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Nope. We're done.
All right. We'll go out there and make some trouble. Well, thank you once again, Jean. And again, thank you everyone who joined us today. On behalf of all of us at the Shift Network, I wish you well and look forward to having you on this course or another one in the future. Have a great day, everyone.